Traveling all across the nation, moving at the speed of light, so amazing. Any trial and tribulation that we're facing, come and take a ride with me, we escaping to be with the Lord and His creation, and the righteous from all generations. In the scriptures, it's vivid like a painting. The grandest
Fantasy Baseball Life Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host here, Starks. You can find me on my Twitter handle. It's at Starks_industry. You can also find me on Instagram, m.starkspal. I'm not here alone this evening, morning, afternoon, wherever you may be in the fantasy world. I have the content legend himself, Micah. How are you doing today, brother?
How's it going, man? I'm doing good. I'm doing well.
Yes, excellent, brother. This is a great day and giving God the glory. Another week that we can, you know, see a beautiful day. It's unfortunate with events happening, as we know. We're biting at the bit for baseball, right? You know, fantasy in particular, all around. For those that are new to the podcast that, you know, me, Micah, Jacob has been doing, and even the great articles that Mike has been putting on, we're new to the podcast for the baseball content. But just to give you guys a little, you know, logic of what we do here, we expand more on the dynasty outlook of fantasy baseball, but we still dig into the fantasy 5x5, rotisserie, points leagues. So we'll expand in a lot of different aspects in this podcast in particular. Always be, you know, mindful to ask us questions. A lot of times we plan on maybe having an episode or two a week, so be on the lookout for that. In this episode in particular, before, real quick, actually, Michael, where can they find you at on Twitter? I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. You can find me on Twitter at FantasyCentral1. That's the number one. And, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So in this episode in particular, what we're going to talk about is, you know, Micah's strong content that he dropped on. Was a top 20 first baseman. Is that correct, Micah?
That's correct, yeah. Awesome. It was a little lengthy one, but I'm glad I finished it.
Oh, yeah, that was a nice little novel one, man. We're going to definitely talk about that article. I'm interested to pick your brain on a few of those guys that you had ranked on there. As well as we'll touch up on some prospects that are coming up that I think it's important what Micah had brought up. Since this is kind of a dynasty podcast for the long term and the potential what they could be coming into the MLB. So we'll touch up on a few players. So be on the lookout for that. And we will talk a little bit on, obviously, Noah Syndergaard, you know, another injury, unfortunately, that's going to be out for the whole season. What that could implement or indicate in your dynasty format. And should we give up on him? Should we, you know, hold on to him? But that's something we'll look at towards the end. And then obviously we'll, you know, start having our closing pitch. In a sense, what that would mean is maybe just a last logic or thought on a player or anything in particular in life. But if you guys haven't, make sure you check out newlifefantasy.com. Join the mailing list. Join as a member for free. It helps our site to continue to grow. Make sure you check out our podcast, which is New Fantasy Baseball Life. It's available now on iTunes. So if you have iTunes, make sure you review it, give a 5-star rating, and we're pretty much almost essentially available on all podcast formats, so go ahead and subscribe. Keeps things going. So with that said, we'll go ahead and start on the first base article that Micah puts the strong content on, and I'll just go ahead and throw you the ball in a sense, or pitch you the ball, and you can just go ahead and elaborate what your thoughts was in this article, and then we'll touch up on players as well as that, Micah, so go ahead.
Yeah, so initially this article wasn't even a top 20. I wanted to go, you know, just every first baseman, like 30, 40, however, how deep it goes. But, you know, I figured that'd be, you know, a 20-minute read. I wanted to really just get this content, you know, to be the focus for the readers, because that's what, you know, this is what people are drafting for the most part. And these guys, you know, need to be, you know, their value needs to be understood. So I wanted to make sure that was emphasized.
And, gotcha. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and there's a lot of guys I put here, you know, especially in the mid rounds, Reese Hoskins, Trey Messi. First base, people said it, you know, it's not really deep. It's a fairly deep position. If you like, I'd surely draft guys like Mark Canha, you know, CJ Cron in the late rounds. You can wait on a first baseman. You don't have to grab, you know, the Cody Bellinger or the Freddie. You don't have to. You know, if you want to, of course, but there's value all throughout the draft, in my opinion. That's why I wanted to emphasize in this article.
Yeah, absolutely. In a sense, as you broke that down, especially in a lot of players that I agree with you on, and there's some I'm going to question you on for sure, especially the ones that you had mentioned on CJ Cron, you got me more of a believer. What was his name? You said Mark Canha from the Oakland Athletics. Was that his name?
Yeah, Mark Canha from Athletics. Yep.
Yeah, so he's definitely an interesting guy. So, you know, obviously the top two guys, just like you had, you know, in a tier of its own, of Cody Bellinger and Freddie Freeman, of course, two solid guys that we can consider. But the funny thing is, and I seen your tweet out there, and I had to jump into it because it's like when I read your article, man, I always have to call you the content legend because they might not know, but you're a legend in the making, and I love you, you know, the work that you put on the site. Man. No problem, man. And the funny thing is, when you said plain cheese pizza on Anthony Rizzo, or just cheese pizza.
Just cheese pizza, man.
I called him plain because it's like, I looked at it a different way because cheese pizza, right? It is good, essentially good for everybody. And you're probably like, Starks, where are you going with this? I'll get there. So he gets you that solid production, right? He's the producer, right? In a sense, like, you're going to get those numbers consistently each year from Anthony Rizzo. I like to call mm-hmm. him the Rock. But... Mm-hmm. The thing is, to me, I call him plain because he's the plain, like cheese pizza in a sense to me, because he is going to give you that production, but it's like boring stats to me. But just because it's boring stats that you're going to get same stats doesn't necessarily mean it's not good. That's actually still good, right? You might not get the 35 plus home runs from, you could, right? But it doesn't seem like he's that type of player, but you're going to get the consistent production with the batting average. In a sense, so I just thought that was really funny. You know, what's your thoughts on Rizzo, man?
He's cheese pizza, man. He's good. You know what you're gonna get. It's gonna be good every time, as long as you enjoy cheese pizza, and you can't really mess it up. You know, you're gonna enjoy it. That's really what I wanted to get out of that. This is consistent. Like the batting average every year. You know, 25 plus home runs every year. No, he's never hit less than 25 home runs. I meant to say, every year, and maintain a solid bat every season. It's just solid all around.
Yeah.
You know, and you want Anthony Rizzo if you want that, just those consistent stats in your, you know, 5x5 roto leagues and points leagues as well, for home runs, of course.
Sure. Now this is where it starts to get a little interesting already off the bat to me. You know, kind of skimming through, and I went kind of through like your tier three, the rock solid options in a sense.
Yeah.
Kind of combating it back to the nearly unrivaled, which is the tier two, which Rizzo, right. You had three, which is solid, makes sense. Now, obviously, Pete Alonso's up there as well. You got him at four, Matt Olson at five, and you guys should just check out the article. I really, really, really hope and promote that you check out this article in a sense, because I don't want to give everything up. It's just gold content. But I'll skip down to Paul Goldsmith. This is what it kind of stuck out to me, right? You have him at nine, which can make sense because he is essentially slowly regressing in his career. You have him below the likes of Jose Abreu, Max Muncy, and Matt Olson. So my question is, do you think Goldie's going to still continue to regress at this point in his career? And do you believe, like, he's – obviously, you do believe – but you have those other players ahead of him. I just want to ask
you. Goldschmidt, a lot of his production last year came from, like, games in which he hit, like, you know, two, three home runs and just totaled RBIs. He had, like, you know, stretches where he went crazy. Mm-hmm. I will say he wasn't inconsistent, but we saw glimpses of a Goldschmidt we haven't seen before, if that makes sense. And, we, you know, and that's something, you know, you want to keep an eye on. It actually affected his production. So Josh Bell, you know, he performed. He had a bad second half, of course. He hit .229 second half. He wasn't, you know, doing his thing. But his walk rate was 14.4, so that remained elite. So that's why I put him ahead of Goldschmidt. And, you know, other guys, I just feel like they've shown reliability. Of course, Goldschmidt has shown reliability. But I just feel like when it comes to, you know, who you want to be your guy, you have to go with out recency bias, and I think recency bias has, you know, something we should go off of. So that's why I think those guys should go ahead of Goldschmidt, in my opinion.
Sure, and that makes sense, right? So doing like a 5x5 league, if you were to do that to the listeners, in a sense, I did see like you had, you know, your boy, like you like him a lot, Max Muncy, as well as Jacob. He was ahead of Paul Goldschmidt in a sense in first base, for first baseman, I think at 8, finishing in that sense. Then Matt Olson was just right behind Goldschmidt, so it's really close. And if Paul Goldschmidt, like you said, if he continues to regress at this point in time, it's easy, like you said, for Olson, Muncy to be ahead, Jose Abreu, you know, these players, and it can make sense, right? So, and one thing I also want to mention, in your boy Max Muncy, only at the 487 at bats to Goldie's 597, he still finished out better than Goldie. If you were to go by, you know, just by the at bats appearance, right? So Muncy had one more home run than Goldie, like, and Goldie had 100 plus at bats open. So that's just amazing feat right there. So that's interesting to say, needless to say. So kind of moving forward, this one is tough, and I understand why. It's not just you, but I feel like the industry alone feels like, you know, Rhys Hoskins is probably just on the regression spree, which right. And I honestly think that he could be a little bit better. Now, you have him as low as 12 in your first baseman rankings, which I can understand. The poor batting average that he had, what, 226, was a concern. I definitely get it. And I do believe he can improve from last year, even although his expected batting rate was 221. That was a concern for sure. But I definitely believe the new mechanics of his swing that he's worked on recently will help him in a sense with his solid walk rate, which was kind of out, you know, it was kind of overlooked, I think, from myself included. He had a 16.5 walk rate. So hopefully that will translate to a better putrid average that he had last year at 226. I don't expect him to be an average hitter, and I don't think you do either, but I think there should be some, at least some better production this year. What's your thoughts on a little bit, you know, on Rhys Hoskins at 12, man?
Well, I'm a Phillies fan, guys, so I love my Phillies, so I'm gonna, you know, I gotta root for him, but at the same time, I got to be realistic. He's not gonna hit, you know, he's not going to hit 270, 260 for you just based off how he's been hitting so far in his career. I don't even think he's hit 260 so far in his career. So in his MLB career, to be specific. Sure. But like you said, the walk rate is there. So, you know, he'll get on base. So in on base percentage leagues, I would not, you know, be opposed to grabbing him wherever he's being drafted. But You're getting what you're getting unless we see a new swing or a revamped swing, which we heard, you know, we heard about in the offseason. So unless you can start hitting for more average, I think in regards to getting on base and getting home runs and getting some counting stats, that's what you're going to get. But you're going to get also a 250 average. And that's just, you know, that's just the player he is for now. And that's what you're paying for.
Yeah, and that is tough, man. I mean, that 226 was poor last year. And I mean, like you said, he's not going to be a 280 hitter. I mean, we don't think so. I mean, it's pretty evident that he probably won't in his career. I mean, I know he's still young. Things can change. We know that. But as of right now, like you said, it's going to be hard to be even drafting him with the average. You're hopefully getting the power from him. And as he is progressively going down in a lot of formats, you can draft him under your disposal if you want to take that risk. And it's a small risk because his value has plummeted in Yahoo, ESPN, Fantrax League. So I think that could be an advantage for you if you believe he can, you know, have a little bit of a bounce back. So I will go into your fourth tiers, which I actually like. I love this list of the fourth tiers because, like you said, you know, before jumping into this, you had mentioned, like, The logic is that first baseman is not deep, but honestly, it kind of is, right? You know, I can spout off names. Like, I think we're both fans of CJ Cron, in a sense. But one guy I wanted to highlight on, talked about him a little bit earlier with you, was, you know, I was stunned, you know, some of the content you put in there. You had me at hello, or should I say you had me at Sano, right? The down you gave on Sano was just, it was strong to a point I had to even look a little bit more deeper into it just for my sanity, because I remember him coming as a prospect. He was a hard hitter, right? Whenever he had to make contact with the ball in the back. And I think as time progressed on, when Judge came out, it's like other players started coming out. We kind of, I wouldn't say we, I maybe I'm just saying I kind of started to forget about Sano, because I just know when he hits that ball, he hits it hard. So I forgot, like last year, he had a whopping 57.2 hard hit rate. Just outrageous. And the thing that I look at that could potentially be a concern, he started getting hot at the end of the season, I believe. But the concern that I'm having with the 34 home runs that he had, 26 of those 34 home runs were actually off the fastball pitch. So an off-speed pitch and breaking ball pitch is not his best friend. And his expected batting average was under 200% if it wasn't a fastball. So in a sense, I am concerned if, you know, obviously you're throwing him breaking balls and off-speed pitches. But there's more, of course, in the MLB nowadays, there's more fastball pitches in a sense. But if you're going to hook him and make him strike out for his batting average to be low, the off-speed pitch is what's going to get him and trip him up. But maybe he's going to get a little bit better in that aspect. But him also, he's not going to be, I mean, I'm not going to say he's not, but the likelihood of him ever being a 280-plus hitter doesn't seem to be in that atmosphere. But that's not to put a knock on Sano, because I still love Sano. What are your thoughts?
I hear you 100%. I think that, you know, inability to hit breaking pitches, like you said, or all speed pitches, that attributes to his, you know, bloated 30%+, you know, strikeout rate.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a reason that, you know, guys strike out at a rate that high. There's something, you know, there's a big hole in their game that they're just trying to fix. Mm-hmm. And you look at Aaron Judge. And Aaron Judge is interesting because his rate is kind of bloated because he gets a lot of call strikes against him for some reason. Maybe it's because of his size, his stance. I don't know. But he does because his O swing is in the 20s, in the mid 20s, I think. So he's not swinging out of the zone a lot, but he's getting a lot of strikeouts. So that's why I compared him to Aaron Judge, because it's interesting to see a guy hit the ball hard and get on base with a, you know, decent walk percentage, but have such a high strikeout rate. So they're very similar in regards to, you know, how strong they are size wise, how hard they hit the ball. And honestly, he's honestly a bargain. I think he's Aaron Judge's twin. You can get him 10 rounds 10 rounds later at this point. You know, he was, because Aaron Judge was going, I think, what was it, third round earlier this spring before the injuries cut. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
They're very similar players. So I like Sano, but like you said, he needs to improve on the breaking pitches before, you know, we can bet on a solid batting average. But I think he has big, you know, ability to, you know, he has the ability to do big things, but he also has a lot of work to do in regards to fixing his game with the plate discipline. But we'll see if he can fix it. He's only 26 years old, so he has time.
Oh, for sure. And just like you said, the comparison to Judge even had it in an article. I mean, that makes sense, because that's okay. So that's one thing, just to get on a rant real quick. Analytics is perfect, right? Sometimes it could potential also be an outlier too, because just like the frame of him and Judge, right? There's always things question about. So when Judge came out before the season, when he came into the Yankees, and I think who was that one guy? His last name was Bird. Was it Greg Bird from the Yankees?
Greg Bird, man. Yeah.
Right. So there was a fight at that position when Judge was coming up a few years ago, and people were just like, Aaron Judge, you know, what he was doing when he was hot that one year starting out the season, they were saying it wasn't sustainable because of the strikeout rate, this, that, and the other. But he continued to do well. Unfortunately, he hasn't been healthy here recently, so I just think, you know, we have to take everything with a grain of salt and look at that. That's not to say analytics is not the end all. It's not saying that the analytics is the end all be all, but we have to contribute to everything as a whole and a factor. But now, in that aspect, with that, my last guy before you want to rush up more on your article, which is perfectly fine. I cannot believe it. Like you had mentioned, it's Carlos Santana, man. Like this guy, he is always going to be a player now.
Yeah.
That's going to be overlooked. I don't know if he's 33 or 34. I don't know if you could check that. His age.
He's I think he's 33.
Okay.
He might turn 34 this year, but I believe 33 right now.
Perfect. Thank you. So that, in a sense, he's still like, that's not bad, right? And he seems like he's been around for the longest time. But if you were in a 5x5 league, he was a top four first baseman, right?
Yeah.
And he averaged 281, 31 home runs last year, 93 RBIs, 110 runs, right? And it's like he was ahead of Josh Bell, Max Muncy, mm-hmm. Goldie, Matt Olson, Christian Walker. Like, I can go on for days, right? But Anthony Rizzo, it's crazy on how he was essentially, that's 5x5 for the listeners, that he was ahead of those people. And he's going to be drafted, as I like to say, you're going to cut coupons getting him in any draft, or you're going to get the value in that draft. So it's like, when is it going to ever stop with him? He is a producer, and although he might be like someone that's not exciting or appealing like some of the younger talent out there, like the new nuances of like Pete Alonso and stuff like that, I get it. But Carlos Santana, I would love to get him on my team. What's your thoughts on him, man?
He like you say, he's just consistent. You know what you're going to get from him. He has the walk rate, 15.7% walk rate, 91, you know, he hits the ball hard, 91.8% average exit velocity, matched with a, 45% hard hit rate last year. And those are both career high marks. So wow. This is a guy, you know, getting career high marks at the age of 33. So guys like that, you know, they have the ability to do that because they've had play discipline their entire career. So they've been able to, you know, revamp their swing to such a perfect amount that they can, you know, get hits and get better as they age. Because, you know, the more experience you get, the better you get at something. So I think Carlos Santana might just be getting better. Last year, I don't know. I might have underranked him more. I'm looking at this list. I don't know. I really like Santana a lot. I like him a lot.
Yeah, man. It's like when I seen this, when I seen your article, and then I looked a little bit more, I was like, gosh, man, like he played this well. It's like I'm still like, I feel like I'm going to be overlooking him. And I have to take him more serious if they're, you know, obviously going to be an MLB season and where he can fall in the drafts. And this is why we, just like what Michael was saying, like first baseman is actually deeper than what it appears to be, right? And he's one of the guys that is a solid contributor if you were to draft him. So obviously in a dynasty format, you know, it's 33, honestly, in baseball, that's still not too bad. If you're in a win now type of situation, oh yeah, you can get him at a more massive discount, right? And doing that win now situation, you stock up your team with win now type of players, and he would be a nice contributor of your team to get that championship in a dynasty format. And just to give you guys a reiteration of that, so redraft formats or 5x5 league, rotisserie leagues, points leagues, however you slice it or however you play it, I think at least my logic, it might be different from Micah's, and I would like to ask him after I say this. When I come into a dynasty league, I have the logic of trying to win the first 2 to 3 years. And in that way, because a lot of people draft for the longevity and long-term, you know, 3 to 4 years or something of that nature, and it makes sense. You want to get the young talent so that way you're not forced in a corner where you got all these old, you know, people on your team, and it's going to be hard to rebuild in that sense. But if you draft too young and some of these players don't come out to be well, then it's going to hurt you down the road, and you're not going to have any players to maybe potentially trade to improve your team. So I am a person that wants to have that win now mentality in dynasty. What is your logic in the dynasty?
In dynasty, I approach dynasty with a similar mindset. I want to win because you don't want to just, you know, go into the first season and just automatically think I'm not going to compete this year. That's no fun. You know, you want to play fantasy baseball. So I always go in, you know, saying for the first, all right, I'm going to try to get a solid mix of guys that I like, you know, big name prospects, as well as big name guys that are going to, you know, help me right now. And if you don't mind, I'll bring up one of my dynasty
roster. Just to give you an example of what I did in regards to getting some younger prospects using a big name guy. It was an auction league, and I got Justin Verlander and Zach Greinke. And I wanted to essentially, in the long term, use Verlander to trade down and get some dynasty prospects while maintaining a solid, you know, rotation. And that's something I think in dynasty formats you should consider doing with older guys like Scherzer. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to, you know, depending on how long your contracts are, if you have contracts in your leagues, if you do contracts, you should consider, you know, getting younger guys using older players. Even though if it might hurt, it might look like it's uneven. In the long run, a lot of these younger guys are going to be good MLB players in the future. And you want to grab them when their value is at their lowest, which is now for most of them. And that's just something. That's how I approach it.
Nice. That is great, man. So we do have some similarities in that sense, too. So I guess that's perfect to go ahead and transition into the prospects here. So I'm interested to see that you're obviously your top prospects, but I have probably the weakest one, supposedly. He's barely inside the top 100 in MLB prospects. So I won't say too much about him, but I just want to at least highlight a little bit on him. And it's Seth Corey. You know, he's going to potentially maybe be a part of the San Francisco Giants at some point in time, or at least called up. And he's getting them comparisons, a little bit of Matt Moore, if you guys are familiar with that guy. I like to call Matt Moore the blueprint. But there's going to be sayings of someone being a pitcher versus a thrower. Could he be just a thrower? And what I mean by that is when you become a thrower, it's almost like I'll kind of transition to like Thor, for instance, but we'll save that towards the end. So hopefully he's not just that. But I look at San Francisco, if they were to call him up, I think the opportunity presents itself because Johnny Cueto, I mean, he's going to be the opening day starter, and I don't expect him to be a world beater. He's getting a little bit older. The regression train is kind of coming his way. What, Jeff Samardzija is okay. They had, what, Kevin Gausman. Two players I am interested to see how they utilize him is Drew Smyly. I might have pronounced that wrong. And Tyson. Mm-hmm. I don't know how San Francisco is going to utilize him, but as you guys know, the Giants organization, it looks like it's not really strong. I don't know why they're still holding on to that old moniker of this team. Hopefully they start injecting the young youth there, because what I think they still have Buster Posey at the catcher position. And I know they have a high touted prospect. I think it's Joey. I forgot his name. Do you remember his name by chance?
Is that Joey Bart, I think, the catcher?
Yeah.
Joey Bart.
You got it. Perfect. Thank you. So, I mean, he's going to be a great prospect. He's going to be a great player, I think, when he comes in the league. But coming back to Seth Corey, in a sense, it's just that up, you know, his upper 70s curveball and that downer breaker in his commands, it's the commanding is going to be kind of a concern for him. And that is something that could maybe be retooled. But again, it's just for certain pitchers, no matter how well you are, or just even if you're decent enough, it still goes by the depending of how that rotation is. I always look at and that ballpark field. It's a pretty big ballpark, and if he gets the opportunity, then he could be a strong candidate to be maybe like a third starter or off the rotation in San Francisco at some point, maybe this year or maybe the year after. But you know, in low class A was what, 1.76 ERA, second in the minors, so that was excellent. It had 172 strikeouts, 12.6 strikeouts per nine innings. So with a 34% whiff rate, and his opponent's averages at that time was 0.171. Now, I understand the minor leagues is going to always be different from the majors, but that's just something to keep in mind. I think he can develop to be a consistent starter, and with that, you know, the basically his if he can bring his walk rate down, because that's pretty high. Man, he had like 2.6 per nine innings, so that is something that is concerned. But again, this is probably why he's just inside the top 100 in MLB prospects right here. So I think maybe if he gets his command back in control, that would be something to, you know, look at. A left-hander at 6'2". 195 pounds. His curveball is probably his strongest piece of his arsenal. Any thoughts on him at all?
Yeah, he's interesting. Because the Giants, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, burst any Giants fans' bubbles here, but the Giants don't, right now in the MLB, don't have, you know, front of the line starters, you know, any guys that, you know, really stand out. Yeah, you know, unfortunately, Tyler Beedie, I think I said that right, Beedie, just went down with, you know, the UCL injury and, you know, has Tommy John now. So he'll be back, you know, sometime in 2021, I believe. Then you have, you know, Sean Anderson. You have some young guys, Kevin Guzman, like you said, Starks. So there's not a lot of, you know, I'd say competition. So, like, you can see Corey up fairly soon. If the season had started on time this year, I'd say he'd probably be up sometime in 2021. But at this point, it's hard to say, especially given that we just don't know when the MLB is going to resume in general. So we'll see what happens with that. But in regards to Corey as a player, I do like him. Three-pitch pitcher. He developed a changeup, I think, in 2019, last year. And that probably is what he needed to separate himself from, a two-pitch relief pitcher to an actual, you know, rotation starter. Because you can't – it's hard to be a rotation starter unless you have two or more dominant pitches, basically. It's hard to be, you know, a starter unless you have pitches that, you know, you can use. And that's three or more. So –
yes,
that's
solid, man. Did you have some guys that you want to talk about there? I know you have some interesting ones, man.
Yeah. Let me start with Hunter Bishop. I like Hunter Bishop a lot only because of his plate discipline. And I think when you're looking at dynasty prospects, plate discipline is a important aspect to hone in on. Because when you're young, you know, you don't want, like, of course there are prospects that, you know, strike out a lot and they're, you know, still highly touted prospects. Acuña had a 26%, you know, strikeout rate last year, and he's the number one, you know, overall pick in almost every draft this year. So, but this guy, he had a 31.0% walk rate in his first year, rookie ball. But I think it was a high A, he had a 27.0% walk rate. So, I mean, that's what you want from your guys. You want guys that will give you plate discipline, and then he has a 70 grade power, so that will get, so he'll give you power and he'll give you plate discipline. The average isn't really there. It was middling, but I think over time that will improve. I'm a big fan of Hunter Bishop.
That's solid, bro. Because I was just gonna also say, like, Giants, man, we just look at this team. They just need to inject this talent. Like, I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
I honestly like it because, like, they have all this talent that's kind of just developing. They're going through this phase in which they have to just be patient and just, you know, deal with Brandon Crawford at shortstop. No shade at Brandon Crawford, but you know guys like that just riding out their ways. And, you know, and they have a couple players playing right now, though, that we really should be, you know, looking into. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but Mike Yastrzemski. I don't know. I probably messed that up. But he had a great breakout last year. And I think he's a guy that we should really keep an eye on him. And they have some, you know, guys we should get excited about. So I think we just have to be patient with the Giants and give it a couple years. And they'll have some really nice guys that, you know, can help that team perform. Getting back to the playoffs, because that's a playoff organization, and they want to win. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it's just like, it's funny. I have a friend that's a huge Giants fan, and he would probably be at your neck right now. Because what I mean by that, he's just like so much in love with Crawford. I'm like, dude, he's a good defender. I get it, but like.
Oh yeah, terrific.
But it's like, I mean, he's not like the best offensive hitter. But I understand, you know, defense helps you to be, you know, to get at bats. I get it. So I just always be telling him, like, man, come on, man. Like, Crawford's cool, but like, just he always sends me videos of him like doing plays. I'm like, man, it's okay, man. You don't have to keep sending me this. But anyways,
that's Crawford's a great defender, man.
Yeah, he is. Did you have you had someone else in mind there, brother?
Yeah, one more guy, Grayson Rodriguez from the Orioles.
Okay.
He's I hate to bring up the name, but a guy that you know Grayson Rodriguez reminds me of is Jose Fernandez. Rest in peace. But it's his build. He's 6'5", 220 at the age of 20. That's a big guy, and he was an A, I think high A last year, and he dominated. He had a 129 strikeouts, 36 walks, 0.99 WHIP, 2.68 ERA, and 94 innings pitched. You know, he has command of his pitches. He can get his fastball to 97 miles per hour, low 80 slider, mid 90s curveball. He has a changeup that's developing. So this is a guy with potentially four pitches and maybe, you know, five and he starts to develop another one. So he has a deep arsenal and he can command his arsenal at the age of 20 years old with that big frame. You know, and that's something that's pretty enticing. Of course, you want to keep your eye on, you know, potential injury, you know, injuries and stuff like that. But I like him a lot. And I think in time he could be could pretty easily be a high end starting pitcher too in time for your fantasy teams.
Ooh, I hope you're right because, well, no, I believe you're right. And the thing is, what I'm concerned is obviously the pitcher or the field that they play in with the Baltimore, right? So, but man, yeah, at 6'5", like you said, and the potential that he could bring to the plate would be super nice. You know, the fastball is legit, right? Pretty much almost elite, like top that, I think at 97, probably higher than that here recently, you know, but that's just something to keep in mind. But is, you know, one thing that's mentioned about him is delivery is pretty much repeatedly well. So that's something to always take a liking to. Because when you always hear the inconsistencies with a pitcher in particular, you obviously know that there's going to be growing pains in a sense. But for him to get that good delivery repeatedly already as it is now, that bites, or at least it gives you an implication that he could be a pretty productive player coming right out of the minor league. So, yes, it will be an interesting thing to see from him in particular, from the Orioles, because they desperately just need. And I, like you said, I know you said like a high-end two or even potential ace. I would hope the Orioles can just pull out an ace at some point.
Yeah.
I really hope they can.
They just need talent, man. They need talent. They have talent, of course, but they need talent to actually, you know, start, yeah, you know, producing on the field. That's what they need. They need to start winning some games. But as a whole, I just want to mention some guys in regards to, you know, Austin Hayes, you know, Anthony Santander, they have some guys, Hunter Harvey, that are coming up and doing some things. It's going to be an interesting year whenever we can start playing again and see what they can do.
Oh, for sure, man. We are really biting at the bit of something, getting some type of sports going, especially with fantasy baseball. Yeah. All right. So transitioning to obviously the news that was unfortunate. I know we're a little behind, but Noah Syndergaard, back on the, you know, a few weeks ago, well, actually, probably, yeah, about a few weeks ago, he underwent a successful Tommy John surgery on Thursday, the 27th, I believe. Oh, my goodness. So he's expected to be out for 12 to 14 months. Obviously, in a redraft format, you're not going to draft him, or what, like a season-long league, you're most likely not going to draft him. Now, dynasty format, this is where it makes things a lot interesting, needless to say. And I have to ask you, Micah, if you were a dynasty owner of Noah Syndergaard, Thor, what would you do? Would you kind of try to see if you could sell him to get pennies for him? Or would you just be like, man, I just got to hold him because I'm not going to get much for him, or I'm going to hold him and maybe I think he can be better for me next year or something like that?
I'm holding Noah Syndergaard. He's 27 years old. This will probably keep him out until late 2021, maybe summer 2021. Mm-hmm. But the talents, unless he comes back and, you know, and he starts showing signs that some of his pitches diminished in velocity, you know, considerably, then, you know, that'll raise some alarms. But unless we see nothing like that, there's no reason to believe he won't come back and be the same Syndergaard that he was. You just had to miss him for 12 to 14 months, unfortunately, as he goes through this process. So in dynasty leagues, I'm not, unless I get an offer that, you know, is fair
I'm not trading. I'm not dealing Syndergaard. I'm just going to hold him and keep him. But that's how I see it. I would not trade Syndergaard.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you here as well too. I just don't see how you could actually trade him, right? Because if you were to trade him, what would you get in return for him? But the thing is, I would still be interested to see if there was some offers. I would look for entertainment, but the likelihood of me keeping him is pretty much more solid that I'm going to hold him because of what the potential he could be. But the issue we also run into is, like last year, let me ask you this question as well. He didn't finish too strong, right, as a pitcher last year. He struggled, a matter of fact. His ERA was 4.28. His strikeouts were still fine. He pitched pretty much a whole season, but he didn't do quite well. So is that from that his previous season? Are you concerned and about that if he comes back? And then number two, is he ever going to be the same, you think, after this surgery?
I think a lot of I think I did a write up on Syndergaard earlier this year. I saw that a lot of his problems came from just how ineffective his fastball and sinker were. His breaking balls are fine. You know, his slider, curveball, they were fine. But his sinker and his fastball gave up both an average over 280. So you're not going to be effective if you can't have a fastball or sinker that can, you know, at least, you know, limit some damage. And he got torn up last year from the sinker. I think the sinker had gave up a 301 average. So That's a big part of his game that he just needs to, you know, fix. And I think that this comes with knowing how to use your pitches and when to use which pitches, especially when you have a deep arsenal. Especially when you know that you have, you know, a good fastball and sinker that can touch 98, 99, 100 like Syndergaard can. Maybe you get overconfident and you just don't know, you know, where or when you want to throw your pitches. And that's something he has to figure out, obviously. So we'll see if he can. But I think he can. The talent is there. You know, the XFIP, I don't think, has ever been over 3.6 since he's been in MLB. So we'll see what he can do.
Interesting. Thank you so much. Yeah, that is really interesting. Thank you so much for the breakdown on Thor. And I hope that he comes back, you know, when he comes back healthy, that he doesn't have any more injuries. And I know there's a lot of people that's already concerned that maybe his career is over. You know, some people are just never the same after that type of surgery. So.
Yeah.
Look out for that. So we'll go ahead and get into the closing pitch. And the closing pitch I will take this evening, morning, afternoon, wherever you may be in the fantasy world, is Jose Peraza, Boston Red Sox. It looks like he's favored to start second base over Michael Chavis. However, you know, you pronounce his name. So that's interesting to see. I actually had liked Chavis, having him picking up from the waiver wire last year. He was hot, and then he started really to cool off. But let me ask you this before you take your closing pitch there. Do you think Jose deserves that position? And I guess, do you just believe he outright should have that position over Michael Chavis?
I think the Red Sox might find a way to get them both on the field somehow, some way, because they do want to get Chavis, you know, developed. But at the same time, in regards to Peraza, they acquired him to see if they can ink out any, you know, left confidence in his ability. Because if you can do that, you can might potentially get a 260-270 average with a bunch of steals, and that's very valuable for any team and any fantasy team as well, real life and fantasy. So in regards to Peraza, I think he needs to perform out of the gate if he wants to have, you know, a starting spot. He needs to continue to perform. If he starts to falter, they won't hesitate. They'll grab him out the lineup, I think. So we need to be consistent in production for it to work.
For sure. And I'm with you. Maybe they have to find a way to get them both on the field, and that could make sense too. So do you have a closing pitch there for the listeners, man?
Trent Grisham and how
I think
I've gotten him in every league I've played. I've just been trying to grab him everywhere because he's especially in roto leagues, he could be free 2020 value. Who doesn't want that? And the last, you know, fifth to last pick. So yeah, and he's a starter. He's going to start in center field for the Padres. The Prodigies, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And and the plate discipline is there. The speed is there. I think it's in the 90 percentile, somewhere up there. The power is there. The plate approach is there. I like it a lot. I think he'll develop into a future, let's say, 275. I'm going to throw it out there. 275, 90, 25, depending on how the team is doing, 85, and then potentially 25 plus steals. And that's, valuable any year. It looks like Tommy Pham, honestly.
Man, you got me all psyched up and geeked up about him. Yeah, because I love Trent Grisham as well, too. And that's the thing about leagues, I think, when you play – okay, so the listeners, my suggestion is please play in deep leagues or deep formats. There's nothing wrong with shallow leagues, but I think it really tests the mental ability of a GM or an owner in any league when you play in a deep format or a dynasty format, because you have to dig deep. Just like what Micah said, these are the type of players that can formulate and be potential superstars. You just never know. Like, even in your article, Luke Voit, right? He's a solid guy, first baseman that is cheap this year as well too. So if you're in a deep format, he's a solid pickup too. In any deep format, and honestly, he could potentially be worthy of a 12 to 14 man league if you play in that as well. So, oh my goodness, I like that thing as well as that's pretty much it. I will say this, you guys, make sure that you check out Micah's article on first baseman. It is gold content from the content himself. I will actually, hopefully, I've always been busy. It's hard for me to write from time to time because I just be so swamped with stuff. But I may have a Garrett Hampson article here soon. So
yes,
maybe next week. I'll be on the lookout for that. But you guys can follow me on my Twitter handle. It's @Starks_industry. You'll also find me on Instagram, m.starkspal. Give me a follow. I'll call you back. Ask me any questions. And I'll get you out of prompt time.
And you can follow me on Twitter @FantasyCentral, that's the number one. And, if you have any fancy questions, don't hesitate to DM me, ask me, tag me, let me know. And also, I just want to say, we should just continue to pray and just continue to find comfort in God's grace during this tough time.
Amen, brother. So, yes, absolutely. Continue to pray. We love you, listeners, and we're praying for you guys as well, too. Stay safe. God bless you. Love you. With that said, have a good evening, morning, and afternoon.